last week I wasn't here. I went up to a church in London that was very different to us, very sort of structured from start to finish. Starts at 7 o'clock in the morning, the service, and finishes at 12. 5-hour service. How about that? And yes, I turned up at 10, so I didn't even get half the service. And didn't know, it was all in another language. And it was, everything about it was different. In just, well, except that we sat on chairs and we were worshipping the same God, Jesus. But it was just interesting for me to watch. I was observing because I couldn't understand the language because it was a different language. And I kind of was looking at the different, because it's a very traditional type service. And I was looking at the symbolism that they had and trying to work out what it all meant. So it was interesting from that point of view from me. And I kind of, it was quite refreshing in some ways for me to just see something very different. But they do things that perhaps we would struggle to do. I saw people bowing down on the floor. We would do it, but I don't know. I don't know how, we've got freedom, but how many of us would actually bow down when he, you know, and these kind of things. Anyway, that was just a little aside of where I was last week. When I picked Caroline's thought for the week up on your newsflash and I started reading it, I think I'll just read some of the beginning of it because I think it's kind of a reasonably good introduction possibly to what I'm saying. So, a fool, it's on your sheet there. I'm not going to read it all. You've got to read the rest of it yourself. A fool has no delight in understanding, but in expressing his own heart. He who answers a matter before he hears it, it is folly and shame to him. And then it goes on to say, I think all the things that have caused me problems, more than anything, is my misunderstanding, misinterpreting, presuming and assuming and not listening properly. And so, and it goes on. So there's an introduction. And in a sense, some of the story is here is about, well, some of it is about misunderstanding. I'm going to look at, I'm reading through the Bible and I'm picking out bits and pieces as I go along. And things sort of jump out and I think, gosh, I read that before. And although my memory isn't as good as it was, which I don't know if it ever was any good, but I see things quite, you know, we always do when we read the Bible, you see something new and you think, gosh, I've read that before umpteen times and it's fresh. So let me just get going, eh? God said that he owned all the nations. All the nations are his. That's what God said in the Old Testament, right back at the beginning. All the nations belong to God. He made them all. It kind of makes sense, doesn't it? They all belong to him. But he chose Israel to be a special possession. So right back there, for some reason, I sometimes think it's because they were quite stubborn, but I don't know. That's only me. But he chose Israel as his a special group of people. And he chose them to have a close relationship with them, to explain who he is through them. And for Israel to be an example to the other nations. So he chose this one group to say, I'm going to reveal myself through this people, and so on and so forth. And he said to these people, if you worship me only and follow my ways or my laws, I will lead you, bless you, and protect you. And that was the sort of deal that, if I can say, God made with them, if I can simplify it. And we call that the old covenant. See, so you listen to me, you worship me, and I will guide you, lead you, and protect you. Does that sound like a reasonably good deal? Because that's what he put out to them. He said, you worship me, put me first, me only, and I'll watch over you, guide you and lead you. And you know what the people all said? Yes. They could have actually said, no, we don't want that. It was a deal. You know, when you go into a deal, they say, do you want this? You know, say, yeah, okay, I'm up for that. And you sign on the dotted line. And Israel said, yes, we want this. We'll serve you. You guide us, look after us and lead us. But because of that special exalted position that they had, if they broke the deal, because they'd been exalted, they fell further. Does that make sense? Because now God had raised these people up and revealed himself to Israel, and he said, I will look after you and I'll bless you, and you will be a light to the nations. That's the good side. But if the deal falls apart, you're going to fall further. Yeah? So there was a good side and a negative side to the deal. So they had to join in this contract, but because they were in this and you know what? It's like that in life a bit now, because if you get a doctor or a teacher, they're in a position of trust, aren't they? And a position of trust, if they break that rule, what happens? They can be, you know, they hit the media. I mean, it's been in the news this week about the footballer, hasn't it? Because he's had a position of example, a position of trust, and suddenly it could be, if it was just Joe Bloggs here, that wouldn't be in the newspapers. It wouldn't be a big deal, would it? So they make an example, if I could say, sometimes. And so if a doctor or something happens, and this is the position Israel found themselves in, they were put in this exalted position. They were to show the nations who God was. Position of trust. And they had to put God first and only worship him. No idols, no good luck things. So let me just read one of the bits, because I was in here in coffee shop one week, and I was just talking to a few people, and I was kind of, it struck me. And one of the things that they wouldn't be allowed to do was, and it says, when you enter the land, this is in Deuteronomy 18, if I got the right place, yeah. When you enter the land the Lord your God is giving you, do not learn to imitate the detestable ways of the nations there. Let no one be found among you who sacrifices his son or daughters in the fire, who practices divination or sorcery, interprets omens, engages in witchcraft or casts spells, or who is a medium or spiritist, who consults the dead. Anyone who does these things is detestable to the Lord, and because of these detestable practices, the Lord your God will drive out the nations before you. You must be blameless before the Lord. And these are things we perhaps think, I don't do that. But when I was in the coffee shop, I was talking, and this one had played Ouija board. This one had been to a medium or a spiritist. And you start to see that quite a few people just around us do these things. I hope no one here does. No, I won't ask you, but I hope you don't read your stars. I hope you don't. I hope none of you has a little Buddha in the house to give good luck. Yeah, because why would you have a Buddha in your house? Because people have them because they think it brings good luck. Or a lucky charm you bought from somewhere to bring good luck. Because that's the only reason you do these things, is to have good luck. Which in a way is putting your trust in someone else but God, yeah? And in a subtle way, we don't even notice turning to the back of the paper and reading your stars to see if today is going to be that fortunate day that something special is going to happen to you. If you read it and something happens, you kind of start to engage in it. You start to believe it. So anyway, they were told not to do the practices of around them. Don't get guidance from these. Don't go seeking out a spiritist to tell you what your future holds, or playing Ouija board to find out something. You're playing with fire. You're playing with spirits. But you're putting your trust elsewhere, not in God. God says, put your trust in me. And I would like to look at the story, and it's a story that hopefully many of us know. It's Judges, I think it's Judges 6, and it's Gideon. And I found this quite an interesting story. Maybe I'll just go through it, and then as I go through it, I'll just pick out little bits as I go along. So Gideon, what we've got is Israel as a nation, they've moved into their promised land. They've made this deal with God that if we worship you, you look after us. They go in and inherit the land. They mix in with some of the people that are there. And sometimes they're worshipping God, their God. And other times they're getting up to all the sort of worshipping other gods, the people that are around them. And it says, again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. And what that usually means is they start worshipping other gods. That's usually what it's talking about. They worshipped other gods. And for 7 years, he gave them into the hands of the Midianites. That's another group of people. Because the power of Midian was so oppressive, the Israelites prepared shelters for themselves in mountain clefts, caves, and strongholds. So they were so under pressure from the Midianites that they used to have to go and they had hideaways. So that when they came raiding, they could go and hide down in a hidden cave or in a hidden hiding place to stay hidden and away from the marauding Midianites. Whenever the Israelites planted their crops, the Midianites, Amalekites, and other eastern peoples invaded the country. They camped on the land and ruined the crops all the way to Gaza and did not spare a living thing for Israel, neither sheep nor cattle nor donkeys. They came up with their livestock and their tents like swarms of locusts. It was impossible to count the men and the camels. They invaded the land to ravage it. Midian so impoverished the Israelites that they cried out to the Lord for help. So eventually they started thinking, what's going on? We're really oppressed here. When the Israelites cried to the Lord because of Midian, he sent them a prophet. I'm not sure who this prophet is particularly. Who said, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel says. I brought you up out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. I snatched you from the power of Egypt and from the hand of your oppressors. I drove them from before you and gave you their land. I said to you, I am the Lord your God. Do not worship the gods of the Amorites in whose land you live. But you have not listened to me. So they've done exactly what they weren't to do. The angel of the Lord came and sat down under the... That was just a prophecy. And so now we come to Gideon. The angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak in Ophrah that belonged to Joash the Abiezrite, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a wine press to keep it from the Midianites. So what I'm guessing a wine press was somewhere hidden away, like a sunken place. And there he was hiding in there, making sure that he couldn't be spotted by any sort of wandering Midianite. And he was doing his harvest, hidden away, hiding, sort of scared that he might be spotted. And an angel comes to him as he's hiding there doing this stuff. What does the angel say? Keep it from the Midianites. When the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, the Lord is with you, mighty warrior. So there's this chap hiding away from anybody. And the angel comes to him and says, the Lord be with you, mighty warrior. Doesn't sound like a mighty warrior, does he? Doesn't to me anyway. But he was on his own and he was doing that. But Sir Gideon replied, if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? Now this is where I like, see, when with Caroline's message there, the beginning part, I haven't read it all as yet. But sometimes a misunderstanding of the situation gets you the wrong end of the stick. You know, when you don't, he goes, but Sir Gideon replied, if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? He's oblivious. He doesn't understand why is everything going wrong. Where are all his wonders that our fathers told us about when they said, did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us and put us into the hand of Midian. Where's God now? Where is he? What's going on? The Lord turned to him and said, go in the strength you have. Go in your strength. It's an interesting one, isn't it? Go in your strength. Go in the strength you have. And save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you? But Lord, Gideon asked, how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, so I'm the smallest family in my little tribe. And I am the least in my family, so I'm a nobody. I'm a nobody with nobody. Nobody of nobodies I am. So I'm Mr. Nobody. How am I going to save Israel when I'm Mr. Nobody of the nobodies? The Lord answered, I will be with you. I don't know if that would suddenly make you think that you were somebody. When your whole mindset is, I'm Mr. Nobody of the nobodies, and this angel says, but I'll be with you. You could sort of take it on board, but you could still be, I'm still Mr. Nobody, with you or without you. I will be with you, and you will strike down the Midianites as if they were but one man. Wow. And there he was a few minutes ago, hiding away, doing his harvest. Gideon replied, if now I have found favor in your eyes, give me a sign that it is really you talking to me. He could have been having a sort of hallucination. See, I don't know what he's thinking. Please do not go away until I come back and bring my offering and set it before you. The Lord said, I will wait until you return. Now then, I don't know how long you think it takes to go and prepare this meal. I was looking at this, and you think, oh, he just pops in the kitchen and pops back out again. I'm thinking, well, it's got to be a good couple of hours later that the angel's sitting there, because it goes, Gideon went in, prepared a young goat, and from an ephah of flour he made bread without yeast. So he's cooked a meal from scratch, you know, from there's your goat running around. I've got my goat and I've got some flour and I've cooked a meal. It's not like 10 minutes later, is it? I just popped to the, or even just popped to the supermarket. So he goes and gets this, and he makes this meal, cooks the bread without yeast, putting the meat in a basket and its broth in a pot. He brought them out. We'd be quite tight, 2 hours at least, cooking this meal. Brings them out under the oak. The angel of God said to him, take the meat and the unleavened bread, place them on this rock. I don't know what you'd think if you just spent 2 hours cooking a meal and the angel says, put it on that rock. And pour out the broth. There you are, pour it out over there, look. So you're like, oh, I've just cooked this for you. Puts it on the rock and he pours out the broth. And Gideon did so with the tip of the staff that was in his hand. The angel of the Lord touched the meat and the unleavened bread. Fire flamed up out the rock and consumed the meat and the bread. So now he's like, oh, I'm seeing, I'm really, this is good. When Gideon realized that this was an angel of the Lord, he exclaimed, ah, sovereign Lord, I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face. What that, I think, meant in his thinking was, I'm going to die. Because it crops up a few times in the Bible. Where they see an angel, their instant reaction is, I'm going to die now because I've seen an angel or I've seen God. So that was their understanding of seeing anything of God or an angel. It's time to die. My time has come. Ah, I'm going to die now. 1 minute he's been told to go. Ah, I'm going to die. But the Lord said to him, peace, do not be afraid. You are not going to die. See, you're not going to die. Got big plans for you. All the way through, you know, it's interesting to see this because he's with an angel. He sees this miracle. He's been told that he's going to rescue Israel. And next minute he thinks he's going to die. It's kind of muddled thinking all the way through. And I think he didn't really understand the covenant that properly that they'd come into. So Gideon built an altar to the Lord there and called it the Lord is peace. So when we look through the Bible, as Richard was saying, the titles of God, this will be one of his titles now, the Lord is peace. See? And as we go through the Bible reveals God to us all the way through. So, you know, somewhere else he'll say, oh, the Lord is my provider. The Lord is my rock. The Lord is my shelter. The Lord is peace. Do you see? And then we build this picture up of who God is from the little bits and pieces that we get. And to this day it stands there. That same night, the Lord said to him, take the second bull from your father's herd, the one 7 years old, tear down your father's altar to Baal, and cut down the Asherah pole beside it. Then build a proper kind of altar to the Lord. So what, in this village or town where Gideon was living, this is a few generations on from when they came into Israel, after they'd made this deal with God, we will serve you only. You've come on a couple of generations, I don't know how many actually, but a few. And now they've already got an Asherah pole. They've already got an altar to Baal. And so they were worshipping the gods around them. I don't know what... I tried to look up what this Asherah pole represents. It's goddess of fertility. It probably meant something to do with whatever that meant. In other words, it would be some sort of dancing round, probably. And because it was to do with fertility, which meant having children, it probably involved sexual practices. Yeah. So that is one god they had. And then they had this Baal. And they would just worship this god, and they can just a bit of everything. Because actually, these Midianites are... And drastically in their thinking, as they saw the power of the Midianites and the others around them, they worshipped their gods more because they thought they were stronger. So it kind of was a vicious circle, a spiral in the wrong direction because of their misunderstanding. So the stronger the nation they saw over there and these other people, they thought, let's worship their gods because they're stronger, because that's how they saw it. And they'd forgotten about the covenant deal that they'd come into. So they had these other gods, and his dad already had these things. Tear down your father's altar to Baal. Cut down the Asherah pole beside it. Then build a proper kind of altar to the Lord your God on top of this crag, using the wood of the Asherah pole that you cut down, offering the second bull as a burnt offering. It's going to be quite a shock to the dad in the morning because he's had all his altars and things pulled down. And his bull sacrificed. And that's not cheap. It's not cheap. How much? A bull would be expensive nowadays. I mean, it could be, I don't know, it could be thousands if it's a good bull. I'd be like, I've said this before, it'd be like on a farm saying, go and burn your dad's tractor. Because that's what you use for farming. That was your tractor, your bull. So you couldn't plough your fields now because... Oh, my son's gone out. Oh, my son, he saw God and he's gone and burnt my tractor for me. You know, that's what's happened. Oh, thanks, son. And so he's gone and he offers the bull. So Gideon took of his servants and did as the Lord told him. But because he was afraid of his family and the men of the town, he did it at night rather than in the daytime. In the morning, when the men of the town got up, there was Baal's altar demolished, with the Asherah pole beside it, cut down, and the second bull sacrificed on the newly built altar. Oh, wrecked the place. Okay. Now that's bad luck now, isn't it? He's gone and destroyed our gods. What does that mean for us? Disaster, isn't it? It's disasters coming upon us. Isn't that what they'd think? As I thought about this, can you imagine either a local priest or the Pope saying, I want you to burn all the figures of Mary? What do you think would happen? Chaos, wouldn't it? Do you think they'd all go, oh yeah, okay, we'll do that. That's good. There would be a bit of aggro against all that. And I was in a meeting, and it was a multi-faith thing. And I said, Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Yeah? That's what Jesus said. And you know, I wouldn't say set upon, but verbally approached and said, that's wrong. And you know who it was? It wasn't the Muslims. It wasn't the Hindus. It wasn't the Buddhists. It was so-called Christians who said, Dave, you're wrong. You shouldn't do that. Yeah? That happened to me. That was me. That was my experience. And Gideon here, he does something that they think, oh no, you can't do that. So in the morning, the men of the town got up. There was Baal's altar demolished, Asherah's pole beside it cut down, and the second bull sacrificed on the newly built altar. They asked each other, who did this? When they carefully investigated, they were told, Gideon, son of Joash, did it. The men of the town demanded of Joash, bring out your son. He must die because he has broken down Baal's altar and cut down the Asherah pole beside it. They were going to kill him because he'd broken the Baals that they're not supposed to worship and the Asherah pole that they're not supposed to worship, and they wanted to kill him. Why is that? There's a misunderstanding of their whole agreement that they've come into. They've completely lost the plot of who they are. They are supposed to worship the one true God, their God, the God of Israel. And now they worship the God of Israel, the God of the Amorites. They probably, the God of the Amalekites. They'll worship the God of the Philistines. Anything that's going, because, hey, the more gods we worship, we've got more to look after us. Is their mentality. The more gods that we worship, but it says elsewhere, that when they worship these other gods, they're actually worshipping demons, not God, because they don't have the same names or character of the one true God. So this one might be the God of, the Lord of flies. They'd often worship things that they wanted to keep away from or keep a peace from, see? And or they needed, like they'd have fertility because they needed to have children, and they wanted the soil to be fertile. They'd worship things to keep evil away, and all is all muddled thinking. And God didn't want this muddled thinking. He wanted them to be an example, but they would got themselves all confused. And the men of the village said, "Bring him out. We'll kill him. Bring him out. We'll kill him." And this is where I think in, you know, sometimes we get muddled thinking in how we might think about things. So as I thought about this, I was thinking, You know, someone might say, I'm not going to church anymore because bad things have happened in that church. That's muddled thinking, isn't it? That's muddled thinking. I'm not going to go to that house group because bad things have happened in that house group. You know, someone there has been ill. That's muddled thinking. When you do that kind of thinking, it's like this. Bring him out, we'll kill him. You know, it's running away. It's not seeing a situation how it should be. I'm not going to church anymore because something bad happened. Why would you turn your back on God because something bad has happened? And this is what they're trying to do here. Bring him out, we'll kill him because, you know, he's really messed up for us now because something bad will probably happen. So the men said, bring him out, we'll kill him. And I've got to try and find out where I'm at now. So verse 31. But Joash replied to the hostile crowd around him. Are you going to plead Baal's cause? Are you trying to save him? Whoever fights for him shall be put to death by morning. If Baal really is a god, he can defend himself when someone breaks down his altar. So he's basically saying, look, if Baal is offended, let Baal kill my son. Yeah. So he kind of saves his son from that attack. And so it says, you know, Gideon's name changes to let Baal contend with him. And then the next bit, and I'm going to sort of draw it up here, because now, so you can see what the men, let's have a look at the men and what they're thinking here. And it says the next, verse 33, now all the Midianites and Amalekites and other eastern peoples joined forces and crossed over the Jordan and camped in the valley. They just, massive army appears. What would your thinking be if you were those men of that village and your idols had been bashed down? And now, their massive armies suddenly appear. What do you put? One and one together and get what? We bashed down. Gideon bashed down the idols, and now this 100,000-odd army has come to attack us. Yeah, isn't that logical, isn't it? So logical. And Gideon now has to say, well, I've bashed your idols down, and it's not my fault that this huge, big, massive army is coming. Actually, it's their own fault, but God's going to demonstrate something through this. This huge, big army attacks, but your logical thinking would be, Gideon messed up here. He's angered the gods. And the gods now have brought this huge army to really wipe us out. That's the logic, isn't it? Does that make sense? In our modern, in their logical thinking, that we've upset the gods, and now the gods are coming to attack us. And as I thought about that, and I thought, that's what so many of them would think. And how would you get your army to come now? Now we're going to go. Come and join me. I bashed the idols down. This big, massive army's coming, and we're going to go and fight them. Who's with me? Who's with me? And you know what? It said when he blew the trumpet, and he calls the army, come together, let's go and fight them. And God says, you've got too many. Got too many. They had to come to the trumpet sound. He says, look, we'll sift them out a bit. This was scriptural. Those that are scared, they can go home. They lost about half the army. That would scare me if I was the leader. Just see half the army walk off. They could be scared because they're just scared, but they could also be thinking, the gods are against us. The gods are against us. And see, when we've got muddled thinking, we get everything out of, we can attribute the wrong things to the wrong things. That army was coming, number one, because they had sinned in the first place, because they had built the Asherah poles, not because they'd been pulled down. And number two, because God was going to destroy that army, because they couldn't see the end. The end hadn't happened, and they were living in that situation. They couldn't see the victory that they were about to have. And while you're living in that horrible place of fear, this massive army coming, ooh, who's right? Is Gideon right or are the men of the village right? There's a lot of them. I don't know who's right here. Oh, this army's attacking. Whose side am I on? I don't know. But God said he's going to win. And they did win, just with a small 300 men. Beat them. Beat 100 and odd thousand. 300 men. Because they ended up killing each other. In the dark and in the fear and the panic. God showed that he was in charge and brought the victory about. But I think for us, we're part of a new covenant. And I haven't got really time to even start on that. But we have to know what we're part of. And we have to know that how we serve our God. And things like spiritism, we don't do those things. We don't follow the world, what the world does, what the people around. You don't go to spiritists, reading your stars. Don't do that. We don't do those kind of things. I'm jumping straight into the Old Testament here. There's things in the New Testament, but I'm just picking some obvious things because it surprised me how many people did the Ouija board. You don't do that. Don't read your stars. Don't do the Ouija board. Don't go and visit Madam whoever. You know, the Madam going to tell your future and read your hand and whatever, palm reading. Why'd you do that? Why would you do that? When you're serving the God, Creator, why would you go to someone who's going to read your hand and tell you, you know, it's going to be a lucky day tomorrow? Yeah? It's because you haven't got trust in God. We have God Almighty. We've got Jesus on our side. And we don't need to go to these lesser things. And be careful how we interpret things happening to us. Be careful how you read it. You can read it all wrong. When you want to see someone who's gone through a hard time, look at the life of Paul. Got shipwrecked so many times, beaten so many times, imprisoned so many times. What was he doing wrong to have all that done to him? Was he doing something wrong? No, actually, he was doing something very right. He was fighting in the kingdom of light. And obviously, he's fighting in the kingdom of light. He is attacked. But he knew where he stood. And you've got to know where you stand. And I think I'll just draw it to an end here. Just be careful how you get caught up and how you see a situation. When you get into situations, you can read it so wrong and put the blame in the wrong place. We can blame, you know, what would you think if you broke a mirror? See, some people say, oh, 7 years bad luck. That's just, it's rubbish. See, you can't be under things like that. You can't be living by that. You can't be living and thinking things like that are ruling your life. Because a mirror is not ruling your life. Well, it might be if you watch some telly. Anyway, let me pray and think about your reasoning and what you do and why you do things. And don't have your Buddha in your house. Father, we thank you for your word and the history that we can look at and use as examples. Thank you that we have seen the complete story back there, Lord, but we live in a story right now that is unfolding before us, Lord. But we do know, Heavenly Father, that you win. We know that Jesus has the victory. We know that we are on the winning side. And help us to remember that we are on the winning side through the ups and the downs, through the good and the bad. But sometimes we are in the middle of it, Lord. And help us to stand firm and look to you and not the circumstances. And help us not to get the wrong end of it, Lord. I pray you watch over us as we go from here, Lord. Help us to be more aware of those things that distract us, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen.